Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Ravencast. My name is Adam Erickson, and I'm so excited to be sharing this episode with you because I get to talk with my good friend, the Reverend Amber Churchill. Amber is an ordained clergy member in the Disciples of Christ, and I first met Amber a couple of years ago when we were both going through a chaplaincy program called Clinical Pastoral Education at a hospital. And Amber has done more than anyone in my life to teach me about gender and God's role in gender. And as we have been in our culture talking about transgender, I thought that it would be a good idea to talk with Amber. Amber identifies as gender queer, and we're going to talk about what that means and God's role in it. And it's an exciting conversation, and those of you who are familiar with mimetic theory, which guides our work at the Raven Foundation, you'll see deep resonances with what Amber has to say with the theory. At the conclusion of this video, I'll try to put some of those dots together for us. But also the bigger reason that I wanted to talk with Amber is because a lot of these discussions about gender can be abstract, and it's really helpful to me to make it personal. And that's what Amber has done for me, and I wanted to share that with you. I almost forgot to mention that Amber has two dogs who are wonderful, but they're a little loud, especially when they drink water. And so you will hear a little jingling in the background and some lapping up of water, which I swear was not me. It was the dogs. So, anyway, hope you enjoy the conversation. Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Ravencast. My name is Adam Erickson, and I'm here with my very good friend, the Reverend Amber Churchill. Hi, Amber.
Hi, Adam. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good.
We are celebrating today Amber's ordination. It's her 2-year anniversary of being ordained in the Disciples of Christ.
Mm-hmm.
How have the 2 years been?
They have not gone according to plan.
Oh, gosh. Wow.
But, but you know, I've learned a lot through them and got a lot of time to do some reflecting and growth, so...
Nice. Well, I have learned a lot from you during the last 2 years specifically about gender.
Mm.
And it's such an important topic these days. You know, transgender is in the news. And you have done so much to expand my worldview when it comes to gender. And so I just wanted to share you with people and share your story and your wisdom with people about gender. And you identify as gender queer?
Yeah, I think that's a helpful distinction to make kind of right off the bat, is that I'm not, I don't identify as a transgender person. I would say that although in the middle of seminary, I did have a bit of an identity crisis. It went, oh my gosh, what's going on? And so I kind of started exploring my gender after I explored my sexual orientation. And so I would say that at this point in my journey, I'm consider myself gender queer.
Now, I am very... One of the things that I am so appreciative to you about is that I grew up and still largely live in a very binary world.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, there's male and female.
Right.
And I, fortunately, I've grown out of this, but there's primarily heterosexuality.
Right, right.
And I have learned through GLBTQ friends.
Yeah, alphabet soup.
Yeah. And the more alphabets that we have, the more progressive we are, so.
Well, I would say on that particular kind of just quick side note, which... Yeah. Have to remind me because I could go on a lot of different rabbit trails. But on that particular side note, I would say that these particular expressions, when we talk about lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer, questioning, you get into the other letters, which would be asexual, allies are included in there, but pansexual, polyamory, demi.
You're just blowing my mind right
intersex.
Now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what I would say is that these expressions have always been around.
Yeah.
That people have always experienced themselves in more than the binary of male, female, or even gay, straight. But with kind of current movements, thankfully, towards a more progressive stance, or I don't want to say progressive, that narrow might or very singular perspective of what progressive is, but with more an open-minded perspective, I would say that people are feeling more comfortable about living truly who they are in more of a public forum.
And you are truly gender queer. Tell me what genderqueer is.
Sure. So I would say that my understanding, and I'll speak to my understanding of my own gender identity, because I think that's the best. I know my own story and can speak truth to my own story, is that I recognize both the masculine and feminine within me.
Okay.
So do I feel like I am a female? Well, yes, but not really. Do I feel like I'm a male? Yes, but not really. Because I think what I see is that in kind of a theological perspective is that if we look at one of the creation stories, it says, you know, and God created them, male and female, in God's own image, God created them. And that's, of course, not using masculine pronouns, because that's my own theology, is not to use gender-specific pronouns. But if we look at that, God created the male and female part, oftentimes we see those as being separate. So God created them male, and God created them female. But what I see them, what I see that conjunction as being is a joiner. So God created them male and female. God created them. God created them male and female. So that we all have masculine and feminine within us, but they're on different levels within each of us. And so that some identify much more masculine, have much more masculine connection. And I would say that they're probably their recognition of their own femininity is very low, but they still have some.
I think that's really fascinating because I do think that I have some feminine qualities to myself. We all exist on a spectrum.
Mm.
And I think that part of the problem in this whole discussion is the denial that we're somewhere on the spectrum. So we deny that there is a feminine aspect within me as a male,
right.
And I project it out into somewhere else, onto someone else. And anything that that makes me incorporate the feminine within me makes me uncomfortable, because I've identified myself as a male. Not only I have identified myself as a male, but my culture has identified me as a male, and I can find it very threatening if somebody starts saying, you have feminine qualities within you too.
Well, I think the hard part about that is that when we think of spectrum, we often think that they're on the same spectrum.
Mm.
And so that male is at one end and female is at another end. And that, you know, when you begin to move that peg or that dot, that you move closer toward one and this away from the other. When in reality, I would say that there are two spectrums, and that there are two lines, and that you can have, say, maybe someone like yourself who would, say, kind of be higher up on the masculine spectrum, and then maybe midway on the feminine spectrum. But they exist both at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive. They don't negate one another. So you can experience both within the same frame, which you're right. Culturally, it's quite difficult because in our culture, it says, you know, we're given very clear definitions on what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman. And thus, I mean, and you look at the trans community, and from what I've seen, again, only speaking as an ally and supporter of trans people, that oftentimes I would say a lot of people who are transitioning to the gender identity that they know they are and want to honor feel this pressure suddenly to conform to that gender's assigned gender roles and gender stereotypes. And so that if you have an F to M, a female to male transgendered person, so a trans male, that they suddenly, not all, but a lot feel this kind of pressure to suddenly be very masculine. Well, what is masculinity? Is it, you know, working on cars? Well, no, that's a hobby. But like, you know, so these things don't have gender, but because of our culture and our society, we've associated hobbies and characteristics and mannerisms and speech patterns and all of these things. We've assigned them into these categories of, well, that's a masculine characteristic or that's a feminine characteristic. And the reality is, you know, color doesn't have a gender. A hobby doesn't have a gender. It is what it is. But there's a lot of breaking down of those barriers that has to happen, not only in within individually, but also within a societal frame.
One of the things that I have really appreciated about you is getting to know your story. And I think that's so important in these kinds of conversations, getting to know others as human beings. And you just said that there are a lot of barriers. You talked about the barriers to identity.
Right.
What have been some of the barriers that you have had in coming to understand yourself as genderqueer?
I think the kind of first barrier is just this insistence on aligning yourself with either or. Yeah. That you're either female or male. And so I think this is part, while in no way do I believe that we are anywhere where we need to be on welcoming in transgendered people into not only our communities and our public spaces and our homes and our families, but also in our churches.
And in our bathrooms.
And in our bathrooms. Good Lord, it ain't about the bathrooms, but come on. But, you know, like you know, well, I don't think we're anywhere where we need to be. I do think kind of far off on the horizon is this conversation, this bigger, well, not bigger because I don't want to diminish the conversation about transgender community at all, but is this additional conversation about the binary of gender? And so I think for me growing up, the hard part was, well, one, I didn't have language. I didn't have language around what am I feeling. I didn't understand, you know, when I went to shop for clothes, why it didn't feel right or why I always felt uncomfortable when I went and got women's clothes. Like that didn't make much sense to me. It was only later down the road that I realized, oh, well, one, my gender expression, which is something totally different than identity, my gender expression is masculine. And so I feel more comfortable when I express myself with masculine clothes. And so when I dress up, I wear ties and vests. And so I think the hard, not having language is definitely a barrier around that. And also the idea that I needed to conform to one or the other. I mean, I think this is the same on a different plane, but I think this is a similar conversation to people who are bisexual, is that they're told, you have to choose. You have to choose, are you straight or are you gay? Well, you know, it's much more complex than that. And to reduce gender or sexual orientation to an either or diminishes the complexity of the conversation and diminishes the beauty of how people experience their own selves.
Yeah. One of the things that I've really loved about you is your attempt to create safe space to have these kinds of discussions. And even more important than that, you've tried to create a safe space for those who may not agree with what we're talking about, who may be against us in how we're talking about this. And part of what can happen in these kinds of discussions is identity is often defined as who we are against.
Hmm.
So I know that I'm a male because I'm not a female.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I know that I'm heterosexual because I'm not homosexual, right?
Right.
So there can be this identity over and against in opposition to another.
Right.
But you have this very great spirit about you that isn't in opposition to the other, but wants to create a safe space for them as well in this conversation. And I'm wondering how does that spirit doesn't come around very easily. And I'm wondering how you developed that, how that got developed in you.
It's difficult. It's really hard. And I'm not that good at it, I would say. I mean, I appreciate the praise and recognition, but in the midst of someone challenging, you know, like even in terms of, although I'm not trans, I would say that I struggle going into public bathrooms because I'm worried that, you know, what is somebody going to say to me? Like, and so I'm trying to formulate a conversation in my head about, what do I say? Excuse me, madam, let me pee first and then let's talk about this. Or,
Because you are masculine
expression. Right. Well, and because I would say they're probably some very, clearly identified, are associated characteristics bodily about me that are linked to femininity.
Okay.
Thank you, my dad's side of the family. Uh-huh. Anyway, but I think, so when I'm in that position of anxiety and concern, my first thought is not, oh, how can I have a civilized conversation with this person about gender? It's, how do I do what I need to do and get out safely so that I can then carry about my life? And what I'm saying is that it's a challenge because it's this daily reminder of acknowledging the fears and concerns that are also present on the other side. I have fears and concerns that somebody's going to challenge me about when I go into a bathroom, but I can also imagine that another person has fears and concerns about me entering into the bathroom. Like, what does it say that when you see someone like me that you go, oh, what is this person going to do? You know, so I think it's important to recognize that there's a common humanity, that there's uncertainty about this road that we go down, about welcoming people who move beyond that binary, and people who don't fit into what we understand the binary to be. I think the big part is to first acknowledging that there are some concerns on both sides. Because to diminish that other side silences their concerns. And isn't that what I want? Somebody to recognize that I have concerns and that my concerns are legitimate. I'm afraid that somebody's going to question me when I go into the bathroom, when when I really just need to go to the bathroom. But yeah, so I think the common humanity is the first part of that. And I think the second part is really getting to a safe place myself. Like, where I don't feel like I need somebody else's validation to be who I am. I don't need a validation of a stranger to go, you're right, you pass, or good job, you suddenly fit into my understanding of what it means to be a woman. Like, I don't need that. I am my own person. So when I was able, not was, because I think it still depends on the situation, when I'm able to move beyond needing validation, I can move to a space of, well, what's the question you're really trying to ask? Are you really just trying to wonder about how we come to understand our gender identities? You know, like, what are you really asking beneath your why are you in here or your strange look? I think that's part of it.
Yeah,
some self-security, and not self-security, but self, I'm rooted more in myself than and more aware of what's mine and what energy is mine. And I think if I'm in a safe place mentally and emotionally, then it's easier for me to kind of encounter those questions.
Where does that self-acceptance come from?
From Jesus? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you had mentioned earlier
that... No, I think Jesus is... we won't get into my theology right now.
No, let's go there. Because you had mentioned earlier that God created humans, male and female, in the image of God. Mm-hmm. God created them.
Right.
So that suggests to me that there's male and female within God.
Yeah, I would say so.
God transcends gender?
Maybe transcends, but God maybe also embodies all gender. Thus God is genderqueer, and thus God is gender nonconforming. And it's we who, in our society, who have separated them out and said, this is what it means to be masculine, this is what it means to be feminine, and the two shall never meet. But yeah, I would say that I see a God as being genderqueer and gender nonconforming. So
that's going to sound, to not put it nicely, crazy to some people.
Yes.
How do you come to this view that God is genderqueer, gender nonconforming?
I would say a lot of the things that are in Scripture that are love people, accept people, are kind of crazy. But even that characteristic of that word crazy, I think we have to be careful of how we use that and what space we create for those in our community who deal on a daily basis with mental health and mental illness. I think it's just, I think it's, I would say that the idea of God being non-gender conforming is a challenge for some. But what I like about it for me is that it fits for me.
Yeah.
For some people, God is always going to be a man, and that's great. Mm. And for some, the divine goddess and Gaia, and we talk about other faith traditions, and God is feminine, and that's wonderful. But for me, I see it being much more holistic, that God represents all of us. If God is both, and we are both, because that means that the divine, for me, it's tied to the divine is within me, and if the divine is both masculine and feminine, then so am I.
Part of what I love about what you just said is that you don't get trapped in a rivalry with others. So if God being a man works for people, God bless you.
Go for it. It's taken a long time to get there, because I think it gets to that validation piece. Like when I first started reflecting on this, I was like, how could you possibly think that God is a man? That makes no sense. Look at in-depthly at Scripture. Look at the world, blah, blah, blah. I think one of the credits to that was actually my seminary experience at Bright Divinity School. I really, when we entered in, they said that they encouraged us to, at least for the time while we were there, to use gender non-specific language for God. And for me, that really opened up the possibilities of how I could talk about the divine, the creator. And so I think I've really expanded into other language, that I find other language much more, or I connect to other language much more than I do to gender. Because if I use a masculine term for God, then for me that doesn't acknowledge the feminine. If I use a feminine, then that doesn't acknowledge the masculine. So, and that's just at this particular stage in my journey. There may come a time where I feel like it's more appropriate, or I connect more one to the other, and I go back to gender specific. But at this point, I think I try to use a lot broader language.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that strikes me is in the creation story, as you brought up, God creates the male and female.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, later on in the New Testament, says that in Christ there is no male and female.
Mm-hmm.
There is no Jew or Greek,
mm-hmm.
Slave or free, for you are all one in Christ. And the male and female clearly is going back to the creation account. Mm. It's the same phrase. What I love about that, and see what you, I'm interested in your response about this, is that what Paul, I think, is doing is not saying that these categories don't exist.
Right.
But what he's saying is that we can no longer use these categories over and against another. We can't use them in our language at Raven. We can't use these categories as a way to scapegoat the other group.
Yeah.
And I just think that that's one of the keys to this whole discussion, is that identity is so often rooted in who we're not, and what the Bible is trying to get us is not who we are not, but who are you? And when I asked you that question earlier, you said about self-acceptance, mm-hmm. you said Jesus, and you started laughing.
It was, you know.
Yeah, it's the...
Children's moment answer.
Yeah, it's the children's moment Jesus. Answer. Yeah, Jesus is always the answer. But tell me about Jesus.
Well, I mean, I do think, so I also think that gender Jesus is gender non-conforming. Not in the sense that I not being able to speak to Jesus,
sure.
I would not for a moment try to assign a specific gender or gender identity to him.
Uh-huh.
He has his own story.
Yes.
So he can do that with what he pleases. But what I would say that his actions broke down gender stereotypes.
Mm.
Sitting with children, you know, washing a woman's feet, being corrected by a woman. I mean, that's one of my favorite stories in all of Scripture, is the Syrophoenician woman who listens to Jesus, and Jesus talks about all these great things, you know, love and peace and da 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 da. And then, you know, she's like, can I have some food, you know? And he goes, I don't know if he was sassy about it or not, but I'm pretty sure she was bad because she says to him, you know, like, even the dogs get the crumbs, and he turns his ways. And to listen to a woman, the one who were not even mentioned, the ones who are not even viewed as enough to be counted oftentimes, to listen to a woman and to hear, oh, you're right, I do need to live into my message. Oh, you're right, all means all. Oh, you're right, I think is very gender non-conforming for his time.
One of the other things that's really interesting about it, there are, in first century Judaism, there are all kinds of different ideas about what the Messiah is going to be, but clearly one of them was the Messiah is going to be this man who's going to come in
mm-hmm.
and do what tough men do.
Yeah.
You know, get rid of the,
there's
definitely grunting involved, but get rid of the Roman oppressors.
Right.
We're going to go to war and we're going to fight against them. And Jesus does the exact opposite of that. He lets the violence come upon him and shows us a different way, the way of forgiveness, the way of love.
Right.
And I think that shatters, continues to shatter stereotypes of what it means to be a man.
I mean, I agree, because it's the sense of, like, is saying, no longer will culture act upon me.
Yeah.
I choose my own way to be in this culture, and I choose my own way to be in this space. And I don't need to fit into this idealized image of what it means to be a man, which, by the way, is extremely oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are so many, you know, we talk about, like, body image issues and emotions and all of this kind of stuff in terms of women, but we haven't even begun to scratch the surface about what it means to be a man in today's world and how much pressure it is to live up to this idealized image of hyper-masculinity, hyper-anger, repressed emotions, not being able to get out what you're feeling, you know, suck it up, be a man, grow some balls, like, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a whole part of this conversation, too, so that these idealized images, these socially constructed images of what it means to be a man and what it means to be a woman, are strangling us. I mean, and you can, you can go into a lot of in-depth conversation about, like, you know, where does it come from, what it's rooted in, how is it perpetuated. But I think to have someone, to have an example of someone that's so central to a faith tradition say, no, I can sit with children. I can, you know, wash feet. I can sit at a well with someone. I can, you know, I can do all these things that you think is beneath me. And let me tell you what, it's exactly what community is. And this is exactly what the beloved community is participating in life in all of its twists and turns with one another. And to have someone like that then be so distorted by faith communities is a challenge. I think that's, I laugh at the, you know, like, self-assurance of, like, Jesus, and I do laugh at that, but I really do, ultimately, within me, I see Jesus as being this extremely revolutionary character, extremely radical character, and I think my laughter is more at what we have pacified, like, what we have watered him down to be. Gender. Like, no, I mean, I think all of these, that's the reality, is that these conversations aren't in a vacuum. That these conversations, one, happen in real life and happen to people every day. And so that when I walk into a store and people suddenly, I get glares and glances about who I am or what they assume me to be or who I love or any of those things. There are all these assumptions. It takes it beyond just, let's have a theological conversation. It takes it into, this affects people's daily lives. And it shows that there's just an interconnectedness of all of this. You know, it's not just gender, but
One of the things that I find very helpful is to talk about the tools that you have when you go into a store and somebody gives you a look or says something nasty. What are the tools that you have to be able to manage yourself in that situation?
You know, I think,
because you were talking earlier about fear, and there is a great fear from the LGBTQ community about all of this. And how do we manage that fear?
I think it's has lots of layers to it. I think the first is that I don't know a lot of good tools about how to do that, because so I do this kind of get out as quick as I can, and I become very kind of hyper vigilant about what's around me. But having tools to know how to, like, encounter someone in that moment, I'm still working on, because I haven't had anybody encounter me yet. Right now, you know, I mean I do get glares and looks and whatnot, and so I think in those spaces I just try to be really aware of that person.
Well, I think that tool is very important for people like me to know. That you feel like you need to be hyper-vigilant. That you need to be hyper-vigilant.
Right.
And that you need to go into a place and get out of there as quickly as possible. Because I'm, like, in my life, I'm blind to that. It's not the life that I live.
Right. Yeah.
And to hear you say that gives me more awareness and more of a sense that what can I do to be an ally?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is for allies, one is just to be present. So if you see something, I wouldn't always jump in, because that's assuming that we can't speak for ourselves. So, but I do think, I think being present and just kind of doing your own kind of gauging of the situation. So if it's someone who's actually being kind of verbally attacked or threatened by someone, I think it's really important to speak up and say, to challenge that particular person. Like, what are you doing? What's going on that you feel like you need to, and not with I think the tendency is to go to anger. Like, how dare you challenge this person? How dare you not let them in or welcome them in? Good Lord, my dog is a loud drinker. It's not helpful to challenge in anger, because then that just escalates the situation. So if you can challenge and go, you know, what are you doing? Like, back off. Or, but to know that there are someone is there that is willing to stand beside you is incredibly important and incredibly helpful. But then also giving space for, like with me, it'd be giving me space to say what I needed to say. And so you can be a presence there without using your voice. But I think it's also just, you know, recognizing that, like, looks and stares, people feel those. People can pick up on those. I think it really is important, because any marginalized community desperately needs support of allies, but not support, like, as a white person, I don't need to always go into the room expecting that because I'm white and I have this white privilege that I can suddenly be the voice for. No, I need to create space, or I need to acknowledge that what is always already being said, or help to create space, and then stand back and let them use their own voices. But I do think that allies are extremely important within whatever marginalized community, because we need help. I mean, we don't need people to do it for us. We need you to do it with us, to work for justice with us. I think it's an important question of how do I help? But I think awareness is also key. Awareness of what's going on inside you, because maybe you're not looking at me. Maybe you're looking at something else, and I interpret that as, wow, they just gave me a glare, but really, you're wondering what you're gonna eat for dinner. I don't know. So there's also assumptions that happen on my case, and so I think it's part of it is to be aware of not only what's going on in the room, but what's going on within me. Am I making judgments about people that may not be accurate, or that may be based in stereotypes as well?
So. Excellent. Well, Amber, you have helped me become much more aware of myself and of LGBTQ people, and I am just really grateful for your friendship and our conversation. So thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate having the conversation as well, because I think this is something that needs to happen within especially within faith communities. So often, conversations have become, we're just not going to talk about that, and thus taboo, and people have questions, and they're not given safe spaces to ask them, and I think that's a shame, because we often don't really encounter people in the places where they need to be most encountered.
What can churches do to create those safe spaces?
I think just there are several books and resources, and No Way, you know, mm-hmm. These are just ones that I've picked up on my journey. There's one called Ministry Among God's Queer Folk, which talks about some, like, practical aspects of things, like, do you have signage on your church website? Do you have pictures of same-gendered couples? Do you have icons of safe spaces or transgender welcome here? Bathrooms, do you have either gender-neutral bathrooms, or, you know, like, what does that look like? And so, kind of practical building aspects and building questions. There are other conversations. There's another book called Holy Conversations. You'd have to double check, but they're just, I think having conversations is the first place to start, and moving beyond well, we welcome LGBTQ people into, yeah, they're welcome, but they're really just, they're a part of our community. It's not just we welcome in this outside group and they can come and be here, but they are us. We are them and they are us. And so I think the other really important thing is you can also ask, like, what would you find helpful for a transgender person? You know, maybe you're not sure their gender identity, so maybe you ask their preferred pronouns, or asking in a way that's authentic and genuine, I would say is extremely helpful. Like just wondering with people of like, what would be helpful for you here in this space? Because oftentimes there's not a textbook answer of what would be helpful. It's specific to that family or that community. I think in other ways, it's helpful to just begin dialogues about our own gender identities and sexual orientations. I often think that people assume that only people within the LGBTQ community have gender identities. You know, you hear gender identity and you're automatically like, oh, that's a trans person. Well, the reality is we all have gender identities and we all have sexual orientations. But we're taught that, you know, someone like me who doesn't fit into the binary of male, female, I've had to do a lot of thinking about that because I don't fit into what is considered normal. And I think what a big part of this would be helpful is if people started reflecting on their own journeys and their own stories, and to realize that there are connections, there's a common humanity among us. It's not just the queer community that has these anomalies, but that we all experience them. And perhaps it'd be a really good thing if heterosexual people, straight people, and cisgender people, so people who their gender identity matches their biological sex, if they started reflecting on, you know, well, what makes me feel masculine? What makes me feel feminine? And you know, what does that look like for me? Am I different than the cultural stereotype? Well, maybe or maybe not. But so I think just kind of a reflection of all of our identities would be helpful.
That's great. Thank you, Amber.
Well, thank you.
Hi everyone, thanks for watching. A few things come out to me during that conversation. I always hear about how dangerous it is for people who are transgender, genderqueer, women who are masculine expressive, men who are feminine expressive, to go into public spaces. Even dirty looks, and when it gets escalated to even threats of violence, hearing that from somebody that I care deeply about makes it very personal. I mean, these discussions, as I said, can be very abstract, up in the air, but when you boil it down to the human beings who are going through this, it puts a very different spin on it. I mean, this is no joke, you know? So that's the first thing. And Amber does a great job of what allies can do to help. So I hope that you found that as helpful as I did. The other part, the more mimetic theory part of it, is Amber talked a lot about validation and how she doesn't need to seek validation from others by winning an argument or bringing people to her side, that she already is validated. And that comes from God. Mimetic theory says that we will always receive our identity from another. And much of that is through approval or validation. And when we seek approval or validation from our fellow human beings, it can lead us into traps of rivalry with them for validation and for approval. But what Amber has done is received validation from the love of God. And in this sense, she doesn't get caught up in a rivalry with those who disagree with her. She is able to let them be. If that works for you, she said, then fine. But she's ultimately able to see receive her self-worth from God. 1 John says it like this: we love because God first loved us. And that, I think, is receiving our validation, approval from God. And to me, it's one of the best things that we can do, and one of the best messages that we can give to the world and live into. And Amber is one of the best models I know for doing that, and I'm grateful for her witness. So those are my thoughts, and I hope you enjoyed the video. I'd love to hear what you have to think. Thank you very much. Bye.